If we don't have our hands on the wheel, if we don't have our hands on the reins and we are conducting and guiding our thoughts, our system's just going to run the show and take over. Yeah. And that's where these, you know, where fear comes in. That's where scarcity comes in. That's where, you know, we start using negative language. It gets even more challenging because our system, the subconscious, does not recognize a negative. So if we say, I don't want to be in pain anymore, all our system hears is, I want to be in pain.
Hello, and thanks for joining us. I am your host, behavioral coach Jeffrey Biesecker, and that was our guest, radical realignment coach Kevin Russell. We're all on the journey to discover the light inside, that beacon which guides us to live our truest, most authentic self. This is episode number 84. We begin today by simply asking, what labels have you attached to yourself lately? In our modern search for meaning, one's essential task often becomes discovering who and what we are. In answering that often imposing question, why am I here and what is my meaning, my purpose, the search for clarity, labels are what you often call yourself in your head. They are tags that you attach to yourself to describe the person you think you are. And quite often, they are the outside views we can often feel others are thrusting upon us. In simply adopting and adapting to the various labels we each choose to identify with, our guest today, Kevin Russell, is going to help us peel back the layers often buried behind those labels, allowing us to connect and integrate with the light inside each of us. Tune in to find out how on The Light Inside. I'm super stoked today to share a conversation about our energy. Why is it so important? Energy is life. Your thought begins it, your emotions amplify it, and your actions, well, your actions increase momentum. This is when we arrive at choice, and we can't get to choice without recognition, and we can't get to recognition without disruption. So disruption recognition leads us to the choice. And my friends, there is no greater empowerment than the energy of choice. So today, we learn the choices we make allow us to move past labels and archetypes, reconnecting us with our innate wholeness as we dive into this conversation with our guest, Kevin Russell. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Morning, Jeffrey. Doing really well. How are you?
Fantastic. Doing great today.
Awesome. Good to hear. All good.
It just flow with the energy, right?
100%.
That seems to be our core underlying theme, not only today, but throughout our shared view in life, it seems.
Really? Yeah. I mean, the flow, whatever, in whatever way it manifests, and it's going to be different for everybody, but identifying that one and then practicing it too and cultivating it more in life, that's the formula for me.
What a wonderful point for us to look at and ponder as we lean into this conversation today. I'm super stoked to have you here today, Kevin. I know we've shared a lot of really deep kind of in-depth banter back and forth throughout our conversations, our discussions, and just sharing that energy together. I'm super stoked to look at discussing how we move past labels and archetypes, connecting with our innate wholeness. Ultimately. Yes. And, you know, some of the core elements of that, one of those keys, I think we both agreed upon being how that energetic relationship forms.
Absolutely. I mean, that's really the crux of it right there. Where do these come from? Why are they so indelible? And is an archetype or is an identifier or a label, is it a stopping point? For me, that answer was never yes. It was always yes and. It's like, okay, I understand what's going on. I see where things are. And along my own journey, I've had plenty of identifiers that I was very attached to. They're tools. You know, they're tools in the toolbox and they're contrasts that can help us create more of an understanding or a reality for ourselves, depending on how we align, where we align, who we're aligning with. But ultimately, for me, it all starts at our family of origin and even preconception. because we are absorbing energy from our parents in gestation. We're absorbing energy that's going on in the space. So if our birth experience, if our gestation experience is one where there's turmoil and there's arguments and there's strife and there's anger in the household, even before we arrive, our system is already pre-recording in the womb, the lay of the land and learning how to navigate and learning, okay, this is the other challenging part. It's not us. It's not our conscious selves. This is our subconscious mind body that's really the factor or the element that's getting programmed, that's learning its environment, that's learning how and what and who, quote unquote, to be. And, you know, the parents are a big factor in that. If you're born into a military family, or if you're born into a family of lawyers or doctors or police family, then that's a lot of times going to be the identity or the label or the construct that's handed to you at word go. So the opportunity to discover who we are for a lot of us isn't even an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And we go through life, and if it's not something that we're aligned with, if it's something that it's just not for us, then we're in constant resistance. We're in constant states of not feeling whole and centered, but can't quite put a finger on it. And then we get labeled with something else as, oh, you have an attention deficit issue. So you are this. Oh, you need extra help in school in certain areas. So you are this. And then our system starts to believe those things because we hear the message enough. And then our system says, well, it doesn't really resonate. It doesn't feel like me or doesn't feel like us, but this is what everybody's saying. So I guess it must be true. And for me, it's that outside in place that we're all born into. The world operates from outside in, with the assumption that just because we're younger, we don't have knowing, or we can't be self-directed, or we don't have valuable, insightful, heart-centered perspectives to share at a very young age.
You know, we think about some of that at that age. We're acting so much on that inner intuitive knowing that we often allow that to slip out of our awareness. You know, as a kid, we don't have maybe that direct connectness with it, with that wisdom level knowledge of it, that experience-based level knowledge of it. But we innately know and experience certain things that we simply act out in our nature.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I love that you brought that up into the fold, so to speak, because we're so much more connected to us and to our source, to whatever, wherever we come from, source, God, spirit, universe, whatever the comfortable label is for whoever's listening. Again, it's a label. Yeah. But
are they effective labels or are they ineffective labels? Are they serving us or are they a disservice of us? Do we move with them with ease or do we move with them with dis-ease as you so often reflect upon?
Yeah. And that's the challenge, is we're never really given that choice because there isn't that awareness at any level, whether at the experiencer level of the child or the parent level when you've got a bunch of different identifiers going on.
Yeah.
We don't recognize that there's a choice because we're never trained when we're, how amazing would it be when we're young instead of, for boys, you need to play sports, or for boys, don't play with dolls, or no, you can't like the
we
color.
We start receiving those messagings that guide us simply to that more dogmatic experience of being, you know, this is the pattern we're handing you with the intention, often consciously, unconsciously, whether or not it might be aligned with that parental guide, that authority figure's notion of maybe guiding with a notion of success, maybe struggling with their own notions of what might be the proper positive, reinforcing, growth-inducing, whatever label we put on it, mode to guide you.
Yeah. I do think the intention is it's not untoward. It's not evil it's not, we don't want anyone to be limited. We don't want anyone to feel less than or diminished.
Usually. We have to earmark that with yes and, but there are exceptions where
100%
people do kind of, I want to temper this with that compassionate heart. Pick up those energies that they do leverage in those manners sometimes.
Well, and that's where I come to. Every single human on this planet is doing the absolute best they can at every given moment with the tools that they've got. Mm-hmm. And to your point about, you know, where is this influence coming? Where are these labels or identifiers coming for a parental relationship? Well, it's coming from what they were told, what they were taught, what they learned. And so there's a great story about a holiday roast where mom and adult daughter are preparing the roast. And this is grandma's recipe and she's not there this year. So it's mom, adult daughter, and mom's granddaughter now in the kitchen. So in the lineage, great grandmother's not part of it. And they're reading the recipe and it says something along the effect of, you know, this is how you prepare it. This is your temperature. This is how long you let it rest. This is all the marinade and the rub. And then you cut it in half and you put it in two different roasting pans. And they're like, well, that's curious. The adult daughter's asking mom, well, I know this is like the family recipe, but why are we cutting the roast in half? Mom's like, well, I never thought about it. It's just always the way your grandma did it. And so that's the way I did it. So they're on the hunt. They have to find the reasons. They call up grandma or great grandma and this great grandma, we're so sorry you're not here this year, but what's the reason for cutting the roast? Does it help seal in flavor? Is it for portioning? You know, what's going on? She's like, oh no, I just didn't have a roast pan big enough to fit the whole thing in. So I had to cut it and to fit it into the oven and the pans that I had. Mm. So often we don't question why or where these things come from. We just accept them because we're born into them. And it's generational and it's multi-generational.
Yes.
And to your point, our dis-ease doesn't originate with us. Our dis-ease really is something that it can be inherited. It can be learned. And it's so often a lot of parents I talk to that are breaking from these archetypes, breaking from these labels, breaking from these assumptions or feeling like this is the way it has to be, or this is the way it is, are breaking with these generational patterns of, you know, getting away from, well, I do it this way because that's what it was done to me. So that's what I do to my children, you know, which is one of the worst, in my opinion, is one of the worst reasons for doing anything. Well, that's the way it's always been done. There's not a lot of room for innovation or expansion or additional expression in those types of equations.
Yeah, to me, that's such a curious opportunity to become aware of, reflecting upon how we simply mirror and reflect what we learn and know so often in that regard. And then also, it's curious to me how that splitting in half can often be reflective of how we are as human beings. We act in duality. We act in being true to that outside world, and we act being true to what notions we're creating of ourselves. Sometimes that's separated or split.
There can be conflict for sure. I do feel all of us at our core, we do share a singularity. We do share a commonality in that, I would say almost to a T, again, barring, you know, someone who's led an extremely, you know, traumatic, traumatized or impactful life, would most often to a person say, I want love. I want to be loved. I want to be worthy. I want to be accepted. I want to have opportunities for happiness. I want to be able to provide for my family and have enough food and clean water. And it's, you know, the basics are basics. They're there for a reason. But even in the most destitute, you know, comparatively, and again, comparison is the thief of happiness. But if we look at, yeah, I was watching a show where they're following a family who lived on the outskirts of there's a massive dump outside of Mumbai.
Yes.
And he's a tuk-tuk driver, and he makes enough to maybe get a sack of rice every couple of weeks, maybe scrounge some animal protein here and there. And you can wipe the smile off this gentleman's face, and he's got a family of four or five, and he's the sole breadwinner. He's just grinding and working hard every day and joyful. And then you look at someone who's got everything comparatively, perceptively, and we just peel back that layer into the surface, and they most often had something foisted upon them, or they were pivoting or reacting to something in their environment that then sent them looking for an alternate end of the spectrum label to identify with. So often it's action reaction instead of insight, awareness, and moving through perception, moving through veils of perception, instead of just assuming this is the thing to do because this is how I was taught. I think a great practice for anyone is to look just past the label or the archetype. So often our journeys begin at that point of, okay, I am a father, I am a son, I am a employee or worker or business owner, you know, I am a whatever. And then it's like, okay, well, who are you underneath all those labels? And I saw a great testimonial from a gentleman who said that was his starting point, because he listed all the things he was in a therapy session. And then the therapist, to his or her credit, said, well, those are things you do. Those are roles you play, but who are you? And it stopped him in his tracks, because so often we're kept very active, like ducks, where on the surface it can seem pretty calm, but underneath the water, our little duck feet are paddling like crazy, you know? And we aren't often given that opportunity. Mm. Who am I? Wow. That's, I mean, that's a powerful question. It's like, get an answer, run with it for a little bit and revisit often, revise and revisit often.
Yeah. And that reflects us back to that great episode we shared back early on in our program with Benjamin Hardy and his book, Personality Isn't Permanent. You know, for me, this was a monumental shift in how we often are taught and viewed how our personalities are formed. Benjamin shares that our personalities are not a fixed, stagnant state of being until we decide to become stuck in one side way of being. Yeah. Well, mindset, rather than simply being aware of and engaging our mind state. You know, I know that wholeness of mind is a big theme you often dive into also.
Yeah. And that's the biggest challenge there is really the lack of space. And this is the other challenge with the subconscious is that it is quantum for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
It's like a supercomputer. It's hyper, hyper powerful. It doesn't recognize past or future because it's only in the now. So if we move through an experience in life, and this is taking a little aside, but I'll get back to where we're going. If we get an experience and it is traumatic or it is less than love and we don't expire, we don't transition from this experience in that experience, then our system is recording everything that's happening in real time in that situation. So it could be something where we get in trouble when we're young, or it could be a conflict with, it could be something where we do something and it's outside of the expected behavior and we get a scolding. Our system is recording the cortisol dump or the adrenaline spike or getting dropped into fight, flight, freeze and coming out of our balanced mind state. And really we get dropped into reaction. And reaction only happens when we're in our limbic system, when our prefrontal cortex is diminished or even shut down and we're in survival mode. So many of us so often go through survival mode continually, low grade states of survival mode from when we're young, that we don't really get to a place of recognizing we are something other than our form, our name, our body, you know, five senses. There's a beautiful theory that I learned in my design career called Gestalt or Gestalt, which is the sum of the
likewise here,
greater than the sum of the parts. Yeah.
So it's kind of aligned with that notion of equanimity or equal mindedness.
Yeah. So yeah, it's and again, we're not going to be until the paradigm changes, until enough of us get to a point where we are aware and then we start sharing that awareness, even with our children, we're still just for some intents and purposes, you know, walking an uphill battle a little bit of deconstructing the construct, of deconstructing the belief. And a belief is only as strong as the thought. Everything starts with a thought. So if we are given inputs that say we are worthless, we are no good, we are lazy, why would you want to be artists don't make money or entertain it, you know, whatever it is, whatever judgment is being, you know, cast our way, then we are really putting a governor on our mind. And this is the other challenge. We're not even doing it. Our system's doing it for us. Because at the end of the day, our system only wants planning, protection, and safety for us at all costs.
Yes.
The all costs is where the challenge comes in. Because if we don't have our hands on the wheel, if we don't have our hands on the reins, and we are conducting and guiding our thoughts, our system's just going to run the show and take over.
Yeah.
And that's where these, you know, where fear comes in. That's where scarcity comes in. That's where, you know, we start using negative language. It gets even more challenging because our system, the subconscious, does not recognize a negative. So if we say, I don't want to be in pain anymore, all our system hears is, I want to be in pain. So, you know, it's like, I don't want to wear this label. I don't want to be a lawyer. I don't want to do this thing. All our system is saying is, oh yeah, more of the thing, because we're really good at identifying what we don't want. It's more challenging to take that step back into ourselves behind the labels and really hold up that mirror and say, who am I and what do I align with at my core? What resonates with me at my heart center? What resonates and gives me, as my wife likes to say, truth bumps? Where you hear or you feel an idea and it just hits you like
it's that energy flow.
There you go.
We look at that. Jung called it the collective unconscious, you know, that inherent unconscious idea pattern or idea thought, you know, that image, in essence, an ideal or average of how we all view ourselves. You know, we've hung up on these ideas as its own pattern for over 100 years.
Right.
know, as they were passed down from Freud and Jung, and to a lesser degree, Adler, Erickson, Hornet, stark generalizations of who any one of us might be. You know, we all becomes that collective notion. You know, so often we say, we all do it.
Right.
We're unconsciously pushing that back there and just saying, okay, well, we're all going to just jump over the cliff. That saying, you know, when we're youth so often, if your friends are all jumping, are you going to jump too?
Right.
Where do we draw that fine line that we're not falling over that boundary?
So that's, for me, the practice is, and it is a practice. This isn't, there's no one and done. There's no magic pill to, you know, break from generations of patterns or belief. It really comes down to discernment and boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I think boundaries are very healthy and important because that is us dictating to the world, to the universe, our operating system framework. We're saying, nope, this is what I, and this isn't even, this is where it gets interesting as well, because this is actually energetic. So we are broadcasting our message unconsciously, energetically. So we have two electromagnetic fields. One's a toroidal field around our heart space. The other is more of the traditional electromagnetic field you see in illustrations of the Earth's electromagnetic field. That is literally our hyper individual broadcast network of what's going on inside. So we are broadcasting our beliefs. We are broadcasting our fears. We are broadcasting whatever state we are currently in. And so not just accepting that it is the way it is, or I am who I am because of the situation I came into this world through, but giving ourselves the opportunity and space to move past those limiters, or to move past those perceptions, or at least question them and hold up the mirror. I always like a healthy dose of stoicism. And, you know, question everything is one thing. Yes, and. Yeah. Like, I understand what you're saying, and I feel like there's more. And, you know, even in the adult space, so often I see, especially in more self-help, self-realization, self-directed camps, that we're getting hung up on labels still, identifying with love languages, identifying with, you know, different celestial or astrological archetypes. And I always tell everyone, it's not that anything's inherently bad or good. Labels and identifiers, they're not bad or good. It's just like a hammer is not bad or good. It can be used to build a house or, you know, hit somebody in the head. But it's not the thing, it's how we use it. Mm. So the opportunity is to, you know, especially with something like a love language, where we're not really identifying what we are need. Well, I guess it can be perceived as a need, yes, but we're not identifying something that's for us to demand from somebody else. A love language is such a brilliant tool to be able to identify what is our deficit. Where am I feeling less than? Where am I feeling lack, or lack of worth, or lack of love? And often, I mean, you can trace it right back to relationships with parents. And those are the things we replicate in life, because those are the patterns and the beliefs that come into play of, this is how a masculine experience should be. This is how a feminine experience should be. And those are deconstructing in real time in front of us. You know, generationally, we're seeing it happen where entire generations aren't necessarily biting at these constructs.
You know, not to go political on it, but to just draw that line of delineation, the very notion of gender identity. Mm. You know, for so long, we've talked of these ideas of having these combined energies in us. Mm-hmm. Yet, you know, we form these dual versions of what's acceptable, what's not. I'm not going to go down the line today, but that's just to point out, for example, how we can look at becoming more aware of things like that.
Yeah. And I think part of that journey, again, not to dip our feet too deep into that pool, but part of our journey.
That's a different label.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Different label of conversation. And we're not going that route today.
Right. I think part of that journey for many of us, regardless of what side of the masculine feminine spectrum we might fall on at any given point, a journey back to wholeness is a reconciliation of self. And part of that is a reconciliation of masculine and feminine. So most often that can express itself with someone who has, you know, maybe experienced a very feminine, very, very soft, very demure upbringing, finding their voice, finding their strength, finding their power. For someone on the other side of that equation, it could, where it's, you know, we get into the masculine, you know, don't cry, pick yourself up, dust yourself off. It could be getting to a place where we aren't ashamed or we don't feel vulnerable if we express emotion or if we cry or if we tell another masculine leaning person in our life, I love you. Yes. You are amazing, regardless of what the outside looks like. And again, it's the yes and. Yes, we are these forms. Yes, we are these bodies. We are this biology, but we are also energy. We are also spirit. We are also emotion. And we are meant to experience this duality of life using all of these tools at our disposal. The challenge is that nobody really, again, we don't get that playbook. So nobody really knows what tools are available other than the ones that are given to us. So we end up with those two small roasting pans just because that's the way we've always done it.
I want to share a little secret with you today about a podcast booking and matching platform I truly love. As a podcast host and guest, my go-to podcast booking app is podmatch.com. If you currently have a podcast, regularly guest on podcast, or if you are new to the podcasting game, looking to start your show, podmatch.com is an industry leader. They quickly and effortlessly connect ideal podcast guests and hosts. Their process is super easy and highly effective. Create your free guest or host account and set up your profile. It's really that easy. And the Podmatch AI will work its magic in the background, delivering your ideal interview matches within minutes, tailored uniquely for you. As a host and executive producer of the top 100 self-improvement podcast, The Light Inside, I found more high-quality guests on Podmatch than anywhere else and in a fraction of the time. So if you're looking to expedite your podcast booking experience, fill in your calendar with high-engagement content, creating value and meaning for your listening community. Check out podmatch.com, that's podmatch.com today, and discover your ideal match magic. So often, we find ourselves in the course of that yes and answering yes, but.
Yeah.
And that but becomes that resistance to the flow of energy. That often leaves us the butt of the joke.
Yeah.
We turn that into that challenge, that struggle.
Well, and that's that subconscious. Because if we start exploring outside of the framework or construct that's created within the first 7 years of life, which is really when we get our blueprint, that's our, you know, our operating systems being written, the hardware is being put in place. It's really those core programs that we're learning of how to operate, how to be, what to do, what to say, how to act. We then run those programs and as well as onboard additional programs throughout life. So the second we start deviating, the second we consciously say, you know what? There's more. It's not adding up. Something's missing. And a lot of times it's hard to identify it, but we have a sense. We've got a feeling that there's just something more. There's something just beyond our current perception, current understanding, current experience, but we can't quite get there. And that's because our subconscious is trying to keep us safe, protected, and planning for the future. And it's operating solely off of the inputs it's gotten from the outside because we were never given a practice sheet for how to live an inside out life when we're little, of more self-directed, of, well, what do you feel? How does that make you feel? What do you think? And really giving that, you know, creating that fertile garden for us to grow in, as opposed to this kind of, you know, locked in, fenced off garden where, no, we only offer these nutritional inputs and no, the soil will only be this pH because this is how it's been for generations.
Yeah, we're not often allowing that space for those circumstances, for those conditions to evolve. You know, we think about that garden, you often have to feed and nurture it in order for anything to thrive in it. Yeah. Sometimes you have to take things out like the weeds that are choking it off. You know, we're going to go into the broad alliterations today of things. What's choking you off and preventing you from thriving? What do you need to uncover or nurture in order to create that space to simply thrive? That awareness, finding that space where the energy is just simply allowed to bloom and evolve.
And that's 100% it. It is it is absolutely a reductive exercise. And that's in my client practice. That's really the crux of it. We're not adding anything to the equation. We are already completely whole, every single one of us, and completely healed. The challenge is we've gotten these programs that are like layers of sediment that we just trash compact on top of this wholeness, on top of this innate presence and peace and just, you know, expression of love. And those are the programs that our system runs because those are the real world things it's experienced. It hasn't experienced those more peaceful, balanced, mind and heart centered ways of being. So it can't operate at that because it really hasn't been exposed to those things.
I love that way of illustrating that. that overloaded trash can. How often do we find ourselves in that position where we're stuffing more trash in there? We're up there packing it down. I know I do from my perspective.
Sure.
You know, we're pushing more in there and we're reluctant to simply take it out and allow it to be more effective.
Well, because we're conducted or guided away from that at every turn. Because in order to look within, we have to go through probably some emotional experiences. Yeah. And, you know, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't. Back to that masculine, feminine side of the spectrum. There are still these archetypes of, you know, with girls, feminine identifying individuals. Oh, why do you have to be so emotional? Does everything have to be such a big deal? So we're kind of, you know, truncated in that way where, okay, well, I guess I'm not allowed to express myself or my emotions. And on the other side of the equation, which we touched on, boys don't cry, dust yourself off, you're fine. And so we get these governors put on us, these limiters put on us, and they guide us or direct us away from these natural pressure release valves that we have, which are our emotions and we have tear ducts for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you know, we have these release valves built in, but it's almost like they're, you know, we fence them off at a very early age and we're not really enabling ourselves to utilize the full function of this form, which does include emotional and energetic release.
I want to guide that back a little bit here, back to that notion of the whole brain state. Yeah. You shared somewhere in your materials an interesting study by Jeffrey L. Fallon. Fallon, am I getting that right? And Robert B. Williams.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, Rob Williams and I can't remember the gentleman's name. Hopefully we'll be able to put it in notes and put it in
the notes. Yeah. we'll truncate that, fix it in post.
There we go.
But reeling that back, in this paper, there was a really interesting segment in there that stood out to me. That was a quote by Joseph Ledoux. Again, I know, am I getting the name right? But the point is that emotion and feelings are conscious products of unconscious processes. Yep. In writings of this time period, the term unconscious is often used. So often we hear that word unconscious and differentiating that from the subconscious. Mm. Can you share with us a little bit from your perspective how we can find some clarity on that notion of unconscious and subconscious?
So kind of going with that reductive exercise, you know, taking parts out. In this way, I do like to kind of group things together. So the way I look at it is we have our subconscious mind body, we've got our conscious mind, and then we've got our quantum engine, our heart center, our energy, the essence of us. So from that perspective, we've got our inner knowing, we've got our intuition, which I might say we could label it either our super conscious or, you know, inner knowing intuition. That's part of our subconscious environment, as is our unconscious or subconscious patterns, behaviors, and functions. So within the subconscious, for me, that's where everything takes place outside of conscious communication, outside of creativity or, expansion or very engaged behavior. So the patterns that are written become, or the ideas or thoughts that come into the system turn into patterns, turn into behaviors, turn into beliefs. And then without intervention, those are what guide our lives. And going back to that fight, flight, freeze, so often we're not in our whole brain state. We're not in a balanced hemisphere state of conscious communication, conscious problem solving, or, you know, conscious analytical and emotional balance.
Yes.
Most often we're operating from our dominant hemisphere. It's going to be hyper analytical or hyper emotional. Hmm. And if we don't disrupt the pattern, we're not informing our system that anything has changed. So it's just going to keep operating as if. And so often many of us go through life operating as if we are in danger, as if we are having lack or scarcity as if. So yeah.
I'm laughing because I have some notes here that were almost identical to that.
I love it. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, if we scale back to the last 12,000 years, these are universalities. These are knowings that have been in the human zeitgeist and the human experience for centuries and eons. And it's now, I feel we're at this place of reconciliation. At least that was my journey to it through science, through quantum physics, that really unified Eastern, Western biology, energy, physical sciences, energy sciences, and really kind of from it's a Western unification of a unification that's been known for tens of thousands of years.
Yeah.
So going back to, you know, we're just applying the knowing in a, you know, different way, I guess, in a potentially new way. So part of the opportunity is individuals. So we've been talking not theoretically, but, you know, a little bit, you know, maybe higher level. So how do we apply this? How do we actually get traction with this practice of moving beyond archetypes, moving beyond beliefs, and, you know, really finding out who we are after those things? Opportunity and challenge again. Subconscious operates close to 20 million bits per second from a processing standpoint. And these are conservative estimates based on studies. I can share studies that have quantified these things. Conscious mind operates at closer to 40 bits per second. So right off the bat, we're dealing with a processing disparity of around 500,000% of what our system can take in, what it processes, and then what we can process consciously, you know, with an engaged perspective.
Yes.
The other challenge is that because our system is geared towards safety at all costs, and we are often in low-grade states of flight, fright, freeze throughout the day, we will predominantly experience negative thoughts or negative ideas popping up in our head because we are in a protective mechanism. We are living within this protective biomachine. So the opportunity and the challenge again is moving beyond those. That's the first step. Catching ourselves when we're in negative thought, recognizing that, okay, I'm experiencing this thought, but coming from a foundation or an idea that we are not our thoughts, we are not our beliefs, and we are not our reactions, gives us that, maybe just that wedge, maybe just opening up that door just enough to, okay, I'm experiencing this, but I'm not this. And that can cause a little bit of a disconnect, a little record skips like, right, well, then what am I? Ooh, that's fertile ground right there. What am I behind these things? That's a wonderful place to play. And so, okay, I'm having this negative thought, and it can be just brute force disruption. Nope. That's not me. And I, you know, I'm happy to share offline tools and tips and processes that you can use to disrupt these patterns on a daily basis. It's a practice. So we carry it with us. And the more we disrupt the negative patterns, the more we disrupt the reactions of our system, the self-depreciating, self-defeating, or comparative or judgmental thoughts, that's when we arrive at choice. And we can't get to choice without recognition. And we can't get to recognition without disruption. So disruption, recognition leads us to choice. And it's like, okay, I'm feeling bad. I'm having a negative reaction, having a negative experience. I can choose, now that I've recognized I'm doing this, I can choose to stay here. I can be the pig in the mud and just keep layering it on me and just, you know, kind of wallowing, you know, having an Eeyore day, which is fine. Sometimes it's fun and it feels good to pull that blanket closer and have an Eeyore day. Sometimes it's what we need. And this is the other part about balance, is really letting go of judgment.
Yes.
And the more we can release judgment and comparison internally, the better time we're going to have all around. And that's an entirely in and of itself. But identifying the check engine lights that the subconscious is serving to us, or that the unconscious is serving to us, in the form of, you know, I can't pay attention for very long, depressive or anxious periods. And then if it goes unaddressed or unseen for long enough, then we can start, this energy can transfer, the emotional energy can transfer and start expressing itself physically. So then we start getting irritable bowel or leaky gut symptoms, or pain in the back, or pain in an injury that we had from, you know, years and years.
Recent experience with that myself, and going through one of our episodes, working with an energy healer, kind of uncovered some things I was holding on to that may have been the very source of that gout. What are you holding on to?
The instigator, one of the helpers on our own journey, my wife and I, on our journey of reconciliation within ourselves, and this was a process that healed our marriage as well, was my wife's best friend. She hurt her back in a hiking accident. Mm. And after rehab, after treatment, no MRIs, you know, CT scans, x-rays, nothing showing any damage, and she's still experiencing excruciating pain to the point where she's on meds, and her, you know, she's not necessarily from a camp that prescribes two prescriptions.
Yes.
And so ends up getting back surgery against doctor's recommendations because she has no, like, based on the tools she had at the time, no other visible options. Back surgery doesn't work. Pain's worse than ever. Ends up finding a Western MD who also practiced a form of muscle testing and psychological kinesiology, inquiry into the subconscious programs, what's going on underneath the surface. In short order, found that this pain was coming from her dis-ease or her unhappiness in her marriage of 20 plus years, because so much had gone unspoken or unsaid on her side of the things, on her side of the camp. As soon as the doctor helped her identify these components, and then they released and transformed that energy, her back pain that she'd been experiencing for years literally disappeared in, I think, 5-6 sessions, something like that. And so it's not to take away from anything that we're doing with the physical body. You know, if I have a compound fracture, if I've got a broken leg, I'm not necessarily going to, do any kind of smudging or, energy work. I'm going to go get this thing set and get help. But if we're experiencing something that is absent of a direct cause, and so much of the afflictions that we experience these days fall into this camp, we're experiencing symptoms. There's no direct correlation or causation with something that's happened that's visible. And so we just treat the symptom instead of coming at it from the subconscious, connecting with the subconscious, tapping into that mainframe computer and getting the information that's already there that's going to be able to guide us in short order through either releasing, transforming, shifting perspective, shifting awareness, changing patterns in life. This is where the practice comes in. We can transform things at the subconscious level, provide relief to the system, bringing ourselves back to balance, excavating some of those sediment layers of the tracks compactor. And then, what do we do with it? Because if nothing else changes, then chances are that sediment can go back in that perceived deficit and just layer back up, because that's the protection. That's the shell that our system wants to keep us safe with. So yeah, it's an opportunity and it's a challenge, just like with anything else. But the more we are aware of these labels and the more that we keep them in front of us, as opposed to just assume and onboard those and instill those as our operating system, the more opportunity we have for expansion and growth beyond perception, beyond belief, beyond label.
Yeah, I chuckled earlier because relating back to that emotional reaction based in the past, I related it to this notion or this phrase because of this then, So often we're relating in that way because of this then, that becomes, for a lack of definition or label, that victim mentality. That in and of itself can become a limiting way to view it. Yeah. But looking at that as example, because I feel fearful, then this must be a threat, so often becomes that perspective. Because I might be judged, then I must not be worthy.
Right.
Rather than that authentic and that whole brain kind of logical reasoning of the president, putting it in the phrase of, if now, then what? If I am now feeling fear, then what is causing this fear?
Yes.
Why am I feeling fearful? Am I afraid I might be judged, rather than simply being my authentic self and being vulnerable? Releasing that need to be judged and accepted ultimately brings us into that present awareness of saying, I am simply connecting with that true whole state of mind and self, integrating all of that energy.
100%. And beautifully said. I completely agree. And it's the first way it's stated is limiting. It's fixed. And it's almost zero sum. It's either yes or no. And it's reactive.
Yeah.
And so often,
it's yes, but.
Right. Yeah. Yes, 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 but instead of yes and, right there. Yes. Absolutely.
And will set you free.
Oh my gosh. So much. And
it's
so
not
many
often the
and
truth
will
we're
set
looking
you
for.
Free.
It's just the and. The and sets you free so often.
Well, and because the and is the conveyance. The and gets you to possibility and gets you beyond reaction. Instead of, I am feeling this way because, we're just drawing parallels and we're still in react. We're looking for something outside of ourselves that's making us feel this way. Instead of turning that lens inward. Again, not many people want to do this, but it's literally the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life, is just holding up that mirror. If I'm having a reaction, okay, first is identification. What is this? Fear, anger, betrayal, judgment, comparison. I feel diminished, whatever it is. And because we are so often reactive, it's hard to create space of inquiry or of breaking the equation apart, so to speak. So again, going back to that recognition, okay, I'm recognizing I'm in a reaction. That's the step for me to deviate from the norm or deviate from the pattern. And then opening it up. And if we're really ready to hit the ground running and that deep dive on inquiry in a whole brain or a hookup posture, which brings our hemispheres back online, disrupts whatever negative energy pattern we were in, disrupts that fight, flight, freeze, and ask super conscious, inner knowing, higher self, whatever label we want to use. Show me what's behind that fear. Show me the first time I felt this way and I reacted this way. And then just wait, not trying to think our way out of the situation, but just wait and see what our system responds or gives us as information. It can come in the form of a song, a memory, a visual. And a lot of times, if we're going into this process or practice, open and curious and just accepting of whatever arises and ready and willing to process whatever emotion comes with it, that can actually be enough of a disruption to eliminate that pattern or eliminate that subconscious belief or subconscious program. The next step would be intervention with a practitioner or, learning processes on your own as far as, a self-guided or self-directed life of dismantling these constructs, moving beyond the reactions, and then exploring the place that's there. Open and curious and, I think are great, little tools to take with us.
This again is nodding back to a quote I saw in your website. The more we can identify those layers of subconscious conditioning, the better equipped we will be to release the conditioning that our system holds onto so dearly, and that keeps us trapped in a false perception of ourselves and others.
Yeah,
that to me is the epitome of exciting exploration.
Yeah.
That self-awareness, those uncovering, that unraveling of layers, that simply allows us to say, what's next for each of us?
Absolutely. And I say in the book, and I always share with everyone, it's very much an individual and collective exercise because nobody else can do it for us. We can be empathetic and we can understand and we can put ourselves in somebody else's shoes. But at the end of the day, we are a sovereign energetic being having a human experience who has all the tools already on the inside, but we also have all of the hurdles and speed bumps and sticky points and states of dis-ease on the inside as well. And this is that challenge because we're living and experiencing life within and through a system that is geared towards safety planning and protection at all costs. And this is where the inner conflict comes in, where it can be challenging to disrupt these patterns because we've known them forever. For a lot of us, it's all we've ever known as far as tools we've got to operate with. And we can experience fear. We can experience things that might that feel scary or feel untethered or feel unknown. And as creative beings, as creators of life, of art, of innovation, of new ideas, of creation, we're really living within a system that we can direct. But if we don't take that conscious step, we will remain directed by it. And to me, it's been a continual kind of internal awareness mind game of just, and it's just something that we play with ourselves. All right, self, what are you going to throw at me today? Because I'm not buying it anymore. I'm on to you. I've started to catch my reactions. I've started to recognize when I'm dropped into something that doesn't feel good. So I'm in the active practice of disrupting these behaviors, disrupting these patterns, which then creates that internal space for, and, all right, I've experienced these things, and what else is there? Or, and what else am I? Or, and who am I after all these labels have been identified and experienced? Again, opportunity and challenge. That can be that's the most fertile ground ever. But it can be very disruptive internally getting there because we are going against the grain in some respects against our systems, conditioning and patterns.
And that, my friend, I feel is the layer that becomes the icing on the cake today. I want to thank you for sharing such an amazing conversation with us. I truly feel such a great energy behind this. I feel that our listeners are really going to connect and vibe with this. Where can our listening community go to connect with you, Kevin, and begin to explore their connection and relationship with their fundamental energy nature to create that radical enlightenment that ultimately will help them answer their yes and?
Absolutely. And it really is. It is finding that individual answer. So yeah, the best place, the best hub, so to speak, would be the website, radicalenlightenment.com. Also, we're pretty active on Instagram and Facebook, radicalenlightenment.com for both, and Clubhouse as well. So I do, they're going to become more regular, but I'm going to be doing free energy transformations on Clubhouse, IG Live and Facebook Live as well.
Awesome.
If people are curious about my practice for the more of that self-directed approach, I highly recommend the book, My Guy in the Ninth Floor, Radical Enlightenment, My Guy in the Ninth Floor. It really is a handbook, a process-based handbook of everything that we've really been talking about and a little bit more as far as practices to begin dismantling some of those beliefs and frameworks that you know, potentially keeping us limited. There's a lot of resources there. There's actually, we created a quiz that helps identify your number one subconscious block or a subconscious negative belief. Mm-hmm. So if you're really interested in getting that kind of information of just, I don't know where to start, that's a really good place. We identify our pinnacle or kind of our avatar limiting belief, just in the same way that you so beautifully communicated, you know, what's behind that? Give ourselves that space. Identification is kind of the first part. We identify what the thing is, like, oh wow, okay. How did that come into be? Where did that come into play? How does that construct, you know, come into guiding or, you know, controlling my life? So yeah, a lot of freebies there. You can get the book there, learn more about the work that my wife Kelly and I do there. And you know, connect. My thing right now is I want to have conversations. Really starting with the foundational. And that's really what I look at the book as. It's okay, if you're interested, if this hits for you, check the book out, and then let's really start getting into a workshop. Let's start challenge this stuff. It's just one view. It's one way of putting everything together in a way that worked and made sense for me. It's a starting point, and it can work as a unifying, okay, let's just get everything out of the way. Look at these concepts, beat them up, and then evolve. Evolve the concept, evolve each other, evolve ourselves on the journey.
I really feel we could have went a million different directions today looking at all those layers. I truly want to thank you for opening those doors for us. Go out and pick up the book, My Man on the Ninth Floor. Kevin, I'd love to have you come back again soon. Let's peel back some more of those layers.
Jeffrey, it's been an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate the conversation. And yes, and. Looking forward to whatever's next. Absolutely.
And so am I. Thank you. Namaste, Kevin. The light in me acknowledges that eternal, infinite light in you.
Sir, namaste as well. Right back at you. I'm feeling it. And
I'm so grateful. So grateful. Thank you
for sharing your energy, your insight, your platform. And yeah, looking forward to what's next. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Energy, either it flows, or when it's in resistance, it doesn't. If you are stuck in resistance to what something is not, you're missing out on what is, of all that might be and can be. What you're holding on to in your life often becomes resistance, baggage weighing you down from simply being you. Kevin and I have talked about how the labels and identities we create often become that very baggage, keeping us in resistance to the flow of life. Now we want to know what you can let go of in your life, which will allow you to move with more ease and flow. Drop us a note on social media at The Light Inside Podcast, telling us how you are planning to utilize this episode to become the creator in your life. As always, we're super, super grateful for your energy and support as we all travel this journey to discover the light inside each of us. Please be kind and drop us a review on your favorite podcasting platform. Your input allows us to better serve you, our valued listening community. Join us next week as we all discover how to rewire our energetic field so we can become more effective in all areas of life, as we share a conversation with best-selling author and chief energy officer, Amanda Hill Ryle. Tune in next week on The Light Inside.